This is El Puente Podcast, POC conversation at the intersection of race, sexuality, religion, politics, art, music, and everything in between. Don't just sit there, stand up. Don't just listen, join the conversation with Kim, Dave, and Michael. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of El Puente Podcast. This is Michael.
This is Dave.
And this is Kim.
All right.
And we're here again. Yes. Another week. And what a week it has been.
Long and hard.
You guys might notice that I have several shots of tequila here.
Yes.
It's been that type of week. And so...
He's not even sharing, so...
I'm not sharing.
Yeah.
It has been one hell of a week, so... Let me drink this real quick. Much better. Yeah. How was your week? How was y'all's week?
It was like 2 weeks in one for me.
It really was.
It was just long. It's just like 48 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, between like grants and working on projects and teaching and everything. Yeah. It's just been...
And working.
Too much.
And craziness in the world.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's just over it. I mean, the kids at school are over it. The teachers are over it. People are over it.
Everybody's over it. We're all over it. Did you guys see what was going on in the news this week?
Yes.
What a crazy week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that brings us to Pop the News and Feed the Children.
It is time to talk about what happened this week. Ugh, what a crazy week.
Yes. What had happened was
so much had happened. Everybody be talking about so much stuff. I want to start us off by talking about Bill Cosby, ladies and gentlemen. Mm. Bill Cosby. What a week. Did you guys see the news?
Yes, yes. I mean, I knew it was only a matter of time.
It was just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, this time, black people didn't rally around Bill Cosby like they did...
OJ.
OJ.
Yeah.
This time. I mean, I think people are just like, okay, my people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For those of you living under a rock, we're talking, of course, about the fact that Bill Cosby... finally got his comeuppance this week. He was found guilty on charges, 3 felony counts of aggravated sexual assault in a Philadelphia courtroom this week. And his accusers, they finally got him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can I just say one thing? When I saw the news, I literally felt like a big part of my childhood had been ripped up.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Do you guys agree? Yes,
oh, all I of agree. Us. I mean, everybody watched The Cosby Show growing up.
That was
the family. I mean, that was the representation of black families.
Of normal, black, wholesome...
professionals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, we're talking about a man who at one point, too, was going to buy NBC...
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
he was such
yes.
a big star at the time. He was a multi-billionaire, and it was rumored that he was going to take over as president of NBC.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. You mm-hmm. know, an African-American male owning a major media company mm-hmm. and how far he has fallen. Yeah. But yeah, talking about, you know, your childhood, I mean, every Thursday night, you know, family would get around TV.
Must-see TV.
Black, white, Hispanic, you know, we all kind of saw... ourselves in that family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I remember my dad telling me, you know, even outside the Cosby Show, all the donations he was making to black colleges and what a great inspiration he was and a model he was for supporting the black community, you know. Even with all his riches, he was returning it back to the people.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, just goes to show you. I mean, you can do many wonderful things and still be horrible.
And still be a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, according to the allegations, I guess not allegations anymore, proven in court, mm-hmm. He was a serial rapist. Mm-hmm. He would dope these young women, you know, lure them back into his apartment, drug them, and then sexually assault them. And there are dozens of these women, many of whom were actually in the courtroom to witness that final verdict. According to ABC News, Mr. Cosby is preparing... for his time in prison by evoking the memory of Nelson Mandela, according to ABC News. He is going around saying that he is getting strength for his upcoming prison term by thinking about what Nelson Mandela went through, remembering a time when him and his wife, Camille, went to visit Nelson Mandela, and he's trying to draw some strength from what he sees as an unjustified imprisonment. So
what a what a bastardization of, like, something so amazing.
So sacred.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously that he's sick, that he's just, he has to be just mentally ill, because to be in that deep of denial after you've been caught, and just to actually feel like, you know, he can compare himself to Nelson Mandela. I mean, really, dude?
Yeah, and then just, and think of all those dozens and dozens of women who suffered at his hands. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's something we can't forget in this whole conversation, too. It's like, yes, our childhood dreams have been shattered. Mm-hmm. You know, the quintessential father figure is, like, tainted.
Tainted forever. Black leader. Mm-hmm. Role model for black people. Tainted.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. Well, here's another shot. Thinking about those victims of Bill Cosby and eventual justice. So cheers to that. The other big news in this week, of course, this week started off with horrible, horrible news. It happened again, y'all. Mass shooting. Another mass shooting. 4 people killed in Tennessee, near Nashville. The good news, this time the assailant, his name is Travis Rankin. He was apprehended the next day after the massacre of 4 innocent people in a Waffle House in Tennessee. Police say they found him hiding and cowering in the woods. Mm-hmm. He is so far not speaking to authorities.
Yes, but he wasn't killed.
Well,
why is that?
He wasn't killed. He wasn't roughed up. They didn't take him to a Burger King this time like they did with the other one. But he was arrested. According to authorities, he's not speaking right now. Of course, the big question on everybody's mind is, since all the victims, all 4 of them, were people of color, was this crime racially motivated?
I mean, you have another white man causing terror in a community, killing people, and that's not terrorism? Like, has that word been used at all by anyone?
Not in this case. No, nothing's been used yet. In fact, you know, he's not talking. The police really aren't talking. And he's been under arrest now for a week. And we really haven't gotten a lot of the details about why he did what he did. What we do know is that Mr. Rankin had a long history of run-ins with the cops. Just to name a few from the Washington Post here. They said that he had shown signs of mental instability. He had had his firearms taken away at times because of that instability. He was actually arrested outside of the White House, ladies and gentlemen, threatening y'all's president, Donald Trump. and this is the kicker that I love the most. Apparently, his father had taken away his guns because of all this instability, only to give the guns back to the man.
Wow.
At some point. And you guessed it, the gun that he used in the Waffle House massacre was AR-15, right? What a shock.
I don't understand how these white men get all these chances. You hear time and time again about the history that they have, you know, and the lack of gun control because they're off on a rampage and they're not being apprehended in a way that's going to lock them up for good. And I don't understand that.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's just so crazy. Mm-hmm. This is somebody who was on the radar of the Secret Service and the FBI, and yet he was still able to walk around with guns and an AR-15 at that.
And not shot for holding a cell phone in his hand in his backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a deep-rooted fear. I think society just has this deep-rooted fear, and it goes to every walk of life, and that if it's a black man, they're angry and violent. And somehow it blows my mind that he didn't even get shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not advocating for cops to shoot anybody, but it's just amazing.
Yeah, the disparity, the coincidence, is glaring.
Yeah, and obvious. Well, I do want to make a quick note of the victims and give a heartfelt shout out to their families. You are in our prayers. The victims of the massacre, we need to share their names. They were Tareen Sanderlin, Akaila Da Silva, De'Ebony Groves, and Joe Perez, who lost their lives in that Waffle House. Much love and thinking about you guys and your families. After that massacre. It also should be noted that the only silver lining out of this horrible story is this man, James Shaw, the young black man who was the hero of the day, unarmed, single-handedly wrestled that AR-15 out of the hands of the assailant, saved countless lives, and to boot, after the fact, created a GoFundMe campaign to help pay for the funeral costs of the four victims. This is a true hero, James Shaw.
Yes. And I can't wait to hear Trump tweet congratulations to this person for saving so many lives.
Well, he hasn't done it yet. Yeah, it's only been a week.
It's only been a week.
Yeah.
He's been busy.
Isn't that crazy?
Tweeting about other bullshit.
Yeah. Well, you know, but, and so there you have it, folks. Y'all's president yet again fucking up. But, if you guys are looking for that GoFundMe campaign, I'm sure it's still active. We'll probably link to it on our website. And going to a good cause to help the victims of that latest mass shooting. And James Shaw, you are a true American hero, and we salute you.
It is time for I Hear Ya, where we discuss music. Today, we are talking about El Compa Negro. And no, I'm not talking about you, Dave, as my best friend.
No. No, we're not.
A different Compa Negro.
A Compa Negro. Do you guys like corrido music? Or rancheros?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Not necessarily my cup of tea, no.
No?
No.
Yeah, I guess it's an acquired taste, I guess. But for those who don't listen to corrido music or rancheros, there is a young black man. His name is Ryan Lowry. He's 19 years old. He's from Compton. Mm-hmm. And he is taking the corrido world by storm. He is known, as Michael alluded to, as the El Compa Negro. That is the black compa. What is the translation for compa?
Compa, it's like bud, like my homie.
Kind of I'm going to learn some compa. Yeah.
The black compa.
Yeah, it's short for compadre.
Oh, compadre. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, well, this young man grew up in Compton, and he's getting a lot of attention for obvious reasons. He is an African-American corrido singer. He sings in all Spanish. He's got a pretty good voice, and a lot of people are taking notice of him for his talents, but also for what he represents, which is a really cool cross-mingling of cultures and an appreciation for Mexican music. It coming from an unlikely source. He works with a producer named Antonio Lopez. He's also his producer and his segunda voice, his second voice, backup singer. And Mr. Lopez says that his vision for El Compa Negro is to try to bridge those communities together a little bit and see that both communities, black and Latino, actually have very many things in common.
That's beautiful.
It is. In fact, he notices that corrido music is a lot like hip-hop music. If you've ever listened to corrido music, they sing a lot about, well, drugs and selling drugs and, you know, drinking and nice cars and beautiful women. Huh, what does that sound like?
Yeah, well, this sounds like the perfect synergy and, you know, doing what we do here. Crossing el puente and connecting communities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but, good for him.
Good for him. But you know what? I was thinking about what we talked about the other week. Cultural appropriation.
Exactly what I thought about.
Is this cultural appropriation? I mean, you have this black, young black man singing corrido music in Espanol. Is that cultural appropriation? I mean, he dressed like a corrido singer and a whole thing.
What's your take?
I just really don't believe in that phrase. I just feel like that... How beautiful. It's just like saying, you know, blue and red shouldn't mix. And, you know, it's like you can come up with such a beautiful hybrid when you have people adopt a culture of music that they didn't necessarily have in their culture growing up. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a beautiful, I think it creates another beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I mean going back to that conversation we had last time. I do think there are instances where there is cultural appropriation. For instance, like a large clothing company taking the designs of indigenous people.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And making them commercial and without giving them credit or any compensation. But in this case, I think it's great. Like, you know, he's finding a connection with another culture. That's a sincere connection. And plus, the people he works with are, you know, Latinos. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's not like he's trying to take it and say that he's, you know, it's his thing. He's still giving credit to the originator. So. Yeah,
I think that's what it boils down to. You know, are you acknowledging who came first and, you know, giving people their proper due respect? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Ryan says that his experience growing up is really the reason why he chose the path that he chose. He grew up on El Rancho. He was a kid of the ranch growing up. He grew up with chickens. He grew up with horses. He said that a lot of his friends growing up were Latino males, and that, you know, an experience that, you know, I can relate to. He said a lot of the black kids in school would actually make fun of him because he was a little different.
Yeah.
And he just said that the Latino students just kind of took him in as their friend. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of what led him down the path. Mm. The appreciation of different types of music and different cultures, I think, is what's key here.
Yes.
The fact that, you know, we have to be willing to open our hearts and our minds to different differences, to different cultures and different sounds.
Yeah.
And if we want to express that appreciation through our own singing and sharing that, I think that's a good thing.
It's beautiful.
And the fact that he's got a really kick-ass voice, too. So if you guys have never seen him, we're going to link to his Facebook face. Cool. Great singer, great talent. I'm sure we'll be seeing much more from him. El Compa Negro. And now it's that time for the clapback heard around the world. With this week's clapback, here's Michael.
Yes. So this one is not taken from Twitter or from Drag Race like we did last week. This one is actually me getting to clap back.
This is a personal clapback.
Yes, it is a personal clapback. And it's very, very empowering one.
Ooh.
Yes.
Okay, well, let me get my tequila ready here. Take it away.
Yes. As I mentioned last time, like, my school is experiencing kind of the really dark side of gentrification. And we have a family that's come in and is really not trying to be a part of our existing black and brown community that exists at the school. It's a white family. And they are being very disrespectful to many people in the community, including the administration of my school and our teachers.
Wow, what are they doing?
A lot of really, really problematic language, racial language.
Whoa.
Lots of implicit biases. I would think that they probably call themselves liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But their language and the way they treat people, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It shows it's us versus them, it sounded like to me.
Yeah.
They want to come in and just clean the school up, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and so, like, they've been, instead of integrating with our community, they're bringing other families and having them come register, and mostly white families. In fact, I think they're all white families that they're bringing in. And they're kind of creating this separate
school within a school?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Anyways, but yeah, so my clapback got to happen in person this week.
Ooh.
In front of our area superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
Our community organized itself, and we set up a meeting with the area superintendent. It was facilitated by our teacher union, and yeah, we all got to stand up and speak. And so I wanted to kind of just share what I said that day.
This is too juicy. I don't have enough tequila for this. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I got to unleash my inner Julia Sugar Baker from Design Diamond, who always had those amazing monologues cutting people down.
Let's hear it.
All right. So I've been asked to compile and share some of the concerns that staff and parents have with the way that the district has allowed this family. I'm not going to name the family, just allowed this family to have so much leeway and empowered them to belittle members of our community and take control of every aspect of how our school is run. We feel disrespected and ignored. First off, the negative influence that they have had is not isolated to our school. Similar bullying and intimidation by them is occurring at other campuses. They are on multiple CACs, which is Campus Activity Councils, and the DAC, which is the District Activity Council, taking away spots from other parents. Perhaps there needs to be a revision of the bylaws. They have no background in education, nor in Montessori, yet they want to have their hands in all decisions being made on our campus. The husband in this family was allowed by the district to create a Montessori work group and install himself as the leader of that group. During various meetings and interactions with staff and parents, they have exhibited implicit racial biases time and time again and act in a rude and disrespectful manner with our staff of color. They've used aggressive language and they raise their voices with our staff and administration and have created a division and an erosion of trust. On several occasions, I've heard them yelling through closed doors at our principal. This is a problem of their own making. They have alienated our staff and other families through their actions at not only the CAC, but at board meetings and at our school events. They have no desire to be a part of our community. In fact, they have said on several occasions, they are not here to make friends. Does that sound like people that want to be a part of a community?
Absolutely not. No.
Instead, they are focusing all their efforts on only bringing their friends to register for our school to create a separate community from our black and brown families. The community asks that the district consider the optics of a historically black and brown school being bullied into submission without regard for the consequences it will have for all of our students. Yes, gentrification happens, but it does not have to be in such a racially insensitive manner. This meeting that we are having here today is being held in the hopes that the district will step in and attend to the concerns presented here before this becomes a much bigger and more public situation. Because believe me, if they don't do anything, we're going to make this public.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a clapback sound effect.
This group of concerned citizens have been approached by local social justice organizations, but we are trying to handle this in-house before we take that next step. We only ask that things be handled swiftly and fairly. And the main ask from us, from our teachers, our staff, and our parents, is for respect now.
Wow.
Go ahead, Mike. Woo! Yeah.
How did you feel delivering that to them?
I'm not going to lie. I was shaking.
Oh, my gosh.
I was reading that because I was literally looking right at the area superintendent.
Wow.
And, having to deliver that and just like, you know, one of those, like, what's that saying of like, even if your voice shakes, you have to just like speak the truth.
Yeah. Truth to power.
Yeah, but it was,
well, I'm so proud that you did that.
Thank you. I'm so proud of you, Michael.
Well, I would love to take the credit, but it was a whole community. We had parents, we had PTA officers, we had counselor, teachers, parents of students.
To show you that when we come together as a community, whites and blacks and brown people and people of color, it's when we come together, we can have courage. We can dispel fear and we can have the courage to stand up for what we believe in, you know? And I feel like I'm so proud of you. It took a lot of courage for you to step out. But at the same time, you said you had the support of your community, your school community.
Yes.
And that's what it takes.
And I want to give a quick shout out to Education Austin, which is our teacher union. They were instrumental in helping us pull this all together and standing behind us every step of the way. So support your unions, people.
Support your unions,
you
teachers.
You have to do this.
Get in a union.
Teachers, any profession, support your unions because they are there for you. You know, they're not as powerful in the state of Texas as they are in other states, but They were there for us. So.
Wow.
Thank
and they
you.
Are allies of all different colors.
Yes.
And, I mean, I think that's what spoke to me. You said, you know, I didn't want people to think it's just a chip on the shoulder of these people of color at your school.
No.
I mean, it involved even white people who saw that there is definitely an out-of-control factor with these this family.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most of the racial concerns were actually brought up by white individuals who
good
spoke out.
Good for them. So, yeah. Thank you, allies.
Thank you, allies.
We appreciate that. Yes. Michael, you'll keep us up to date on what happens with all that.
Oh, yes. Wow. The saga continues. All right. And just like we all know, opinions are like assholes. But some of them
hairy
actually don't stink.
What? I said hairy and small.
Where is that tequila? My. We might have to pause this session. I need more tequila for this one. Okay. Hold on. Let me finish this off real quick and then let's redo that.
I want that.
You like that? Okay. So I'll let you fix that one.
Okay.
All right. Ready? Yes, this week in Opinions Are Like Assholes, we are going to be talking about something that came to my mind recently in relation to the recent news that we talked about at the top of the show, the mass murder of four people of color in a Tennessee Waffle House. And like Michael alluded to earlier in the show, why is it that every time these massacres or these shootings or these horrible things happen, the white assailants are always treated with kid gloves. Mm-hmm. They can kill certain untold numbers of people and they survive. They're taken to Burger King to buy lunch before they're taken to the jail, like that mm-hmm. Dylan Roof kid in South Carolina or North Carolina. I forget the Carolina that it happened in. Why is it that Black people in Starbucks or with their cell phone are treated a certain way, and white criminals, literal criminals, are actually treated at a higher standard than innocent people of color? Mm-hmm. You guys got me hot. It got me thinking, got me drinking lots of tequila this mm-hmm, week. Mm-hmm. So here's my question for the week, ladies and gentlemen. Is it time, follow me here, is it time for us people of color to start treating white men the way white men treat and view people of color? Do you guys follow me? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My question is, if we are always perceived as the threat just from being alive and walking around in our skin, statistically, it's provable that white men pose way more of a threat in this country than any other demographic. Mm-hmm. Should we not be viewing them the Thank way you. They actually view mm-hmm. us? What do you guys think?
Woo! Sorry. Yeah. I'm hot about it too, because I feel like, I mean, he had a background. I mean, it's a shame that, you know, that there have been blacks that don't even have a criminal background that have been shot down like dogs. And here, this man had a past where he's gotten away with these things. And
he wasn't doing time for any of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, literally, you know, had an altercation in front of the White House and then, you know.
Yeah, live to tell and to
nothing.
Kill.
Nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, but here's what that would look like, right? Okay, well, come with me, folks. Come with me. Nice. Come
this
with
is,
me,
this
people.
This is a slippery slope. Here
this
we
is
go.
A slippery slope, but this is what that would look like. So let's say that a white man is walking down the street and a black woman clutches her purse. or crosses the other side of the street when he walks by. Mm-hmm. Or let's say I'm driving down the street and a white man walks by. I lock my door because I intrinsically feel this white man is a threat to me.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
to everybody.
Yeah.
Or when a white person walks into a store to get a sandwich, say, on East 6th Street, they get ugly looks and absolutely get ignored because the cashier thinks that this is just a homeless person here to ask money, or they're going to rob the place or shoot up the place. Like,
right.
In other words, what if white men were treated with the same stereotype, the same broad brush that Caucasians generally tend to give to black men? Would that in itself cause them to see our pain, to empathize with our pain? Would it cause them to help understand why it's so wrong? Or would there be any effect at all?
Yeah, there should be a what should we do? Or what is it? What's that show on TV? What would you do?
What would you do?
Yeah, mm-hmm. What would you do? They should do a little segment on that.
Like what?
Like, yeah, what would it actually like, have.
Actually act that out, yeah.
Yeah, act yeah. that. Actually act that out.
I think I want to set that up.
We got to write into the
show. I want to film that. So, like, in other words, like, we have, like, a restaurant full of black people eating, and then we have a white person come in, and they all, like...
Yeah, like, have him come in, maybe with a, you know, Confederate flag bandana or something, you know, and start rattling off, you know, verses, Bible verses and stuff like that. I'm sure there would be some.
I tell you what, and you know, this is crazy, crazy, crazy. I have to admit this, you guys, but mm-hmm. there have been times recently where with all these shootings and all these crazy, you know, sick white men doing all these atrocities, that sometimes when I'm walking down the street and I walk past a pack of white men, I feel threatened. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if this is a bunch of, like, Trump voter racist guys that are going to be looking to talk some shit. Mm-hmm. I've never felt that in my 41 years on this earth, mm-hmm. you guys. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at right now, is that they are...
But you have to be careful, though.
Yeah.
Because then, in an essence, you're kind of justifying white people's reaction. Yeah. To black
fear
men.
Breeds more fear.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly. It's eye for an eye. I mean, we can't
go down that
no,
slope.
No,
but
no.
That's why I posed the question, yeah. you know? It's yeah. like, does it even, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Would it yeah. be even helpful?
I mean, it's a social experiment. Like we're yeah. saying, it might be interesting, but yeah, we have to resist falling into that, because then we become the thing that we fear.
Yeah, but I feel like Dave is just saying, you know, that he feels like that is starting to happen
mm-hmm.
just
naturally.
Recently with all the media. Now, I mean, at least the media is doing press on this, you know, the crazy white, single white male phenomenon, you know, but I feel like that, you know, it's becoming a natural feeling. I mean, I have been in places like a small, you know, town that's predominantly white, and I'm like, oh, I'm Dripping Springs. I mean, I know that that's not a scary, you know, place in this, you know, South that I should, you know, be. But mm-hmm. I just, you know.
You still feel that.
There is a, mm-hmm. like, am I by myself here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, even just in Austin proper, like there are so few people of color compared to the, you know, the previous years that we've lived here. That, I mean, it does become a lot more noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do go to places, like, last night I went to a restaurant, and, like, I was, like, one of three people of color there.
The other two were serving. But I'm changed.
One of them was, yeah. but, yeah, but, it was, you know, and so those things does get noticeable. I mean, of course, I was there with friends who, you know, one of them was Latino. But the rest of them were white, and I was, like... It just, like, kind of hit me at once.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to come across as racist, like, oh, afraid of white people. But there is a certain sense of isolation when you're by yourself and you know that there have been, you know, you've been targeted as a brown person, you know, that you're up to no good.
By white people.
Yeah.
I think the crux of my argument, and I'm not arguing for or against, I'm just putting it out there, folks. But
yes.
I think the crux of my argument is this. For eons now, black men have been made to seem or be the villain
yes.
mm-hmm. in our culture and our media by white men to justify the unjust treatment that we are given.
Yes.
That is the justification. If we are perceived as a threat just intrinsically, then that justifies their brutality, the KKK, police brutality, mm-hmm. The incarceration system, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So my retort is this, and I'm just going to end with this question. Maybe if we flip the script, maybe they can begin to empathize with us. Who should we really be afraid of?
Mm-hmm. Well.
Yeah.
But I agree with you.
Yeah.
Like.
Because then how far down the line does it become?
Where does it stop?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I know the answer. Only love destroys hate.
Yes.
We can't become the thing that we hate.
No.
You're absolutely right about that, Michael.
No.
But I just wanted to start some shit anyway.
When don't you? Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me, those black women who had the police called on them on a golf course this week,
What happened?
Yeah, these black women, African-American women, were playing golf, and apparently they weren't going fast enough for the people playing behind them, and...
they weren't golfing fast enough?
Yeah, they assumed they were doing drugs, I guess. Yeah. Smoking the grass.
Something. Is golf a fast sport?
Right, and I mean, and even if it was, I mean, give us black folks a minute, you know? Yeah. Some, you know, that's not... Mm-hmm.
We're still learning the game of golf. Yeah. We were learning the game.
But anyways.
The Elder and Tiger Woods.
But they got, you know, the police called on them. And so John Legend tweeted this. He said, please stop calling the police on black people who are just trying to live. Please stop. Police shoot us for no fucking reason at all. Please stop.
And now it's time for Kim to give us a brief history lesson. And real history has curves and shades.
Well, one of my biggest influences in music is Billie Holiday. She was one of the greatest jazz singers of all time. In the 1950s, she was really part of the roots of American jazz. And her life was just tragic. She started out as a young child with her father having abandoned her and being murdered in the South. Her mother was a prostitute, and she was basically raised in a brothel and went, you know, was raped, was pimped out, and she still found music as a source of strength and a self-expression. And the sad thing is that she became a drug addict as a result of her horrible childhood. And instead of getting help, she was treated like a criminal, hunted like a dog by a man named Anslinger. I may be pronouncing it incorrectly, but it was a war on black people, but he claimed it was a war on drugs.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Mm. And really, he hated jazz. He thought it was a filthy music. And it was his mission to rally up all these black jazz musicians. But he couldn't because they stood together strong. And so he targeted Billie Holiday. And I wanted to read the words of one of the songs that she sings called God Bless the Child. She says, one of the verses is, them that's got shall get, them that's not shall lose. And she also talks about how the strong gets more while the weak ones fade. You know, even though she had that experience, she still said, God bless the child who's got his own. And she still found that inner strength to do her music and just share a light with the world of her beautiful, unique talent. But it's just so sad to me that I see so many minorities still today suffering mm-hmm. from drug addiction, and that we're not reaching out to give them the proper help they need. Same, you know, reminds me of Michael Jackson. Mm. You know, I mean, he needed help.
He did.
And I'm sure the doctor was afraid to turn him in.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed, you know, instead of being a star and putting him in that pedestal where he wasn't supposed to do any wrong, you know, I get so impassioned about it. Yeah. You have to forgive me. What do you guys think?
I think it's there is a repeating thing that we see with artists in general, but artists of color that are dealing with drug addiction.
Yes.
And that is completely born out of that legacy of Billie Holiday. You know, she was one of the first, if I'm not mistaken, really huge black artists to cross over.
Yes.
And to really bring jazz to the masses.
Yeah.
And she had some iconic performances, some iconic looks.
Yes. That the gardenias in her hair, the flowers in her hair.
Absolutely. That was really transcendent. But at the same time, she was suffering in silence. Yes. And that makes me think of Michael Jackson. That makes me think of Prince. Yes. That makes me think
of Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm. So many artists of color that are put on this pedestal and yet are not getting the help that they need partially trapped by their fame, I would say. You know, mm-hmm. recently it was revealed that Prince thought that he was taking legit drugs for his pain, but they were like counterfeit, or they were like cheap versions of the fact, and that's what killed him.
Horrible. Wow. Can you imagine like having all that money and still getting counterfeit drugs?
But that's a really Billie Holiday is one of those performers that when I have those nights where I just need to have a moment.
Yeah, it was this vulnerability. She was just so authentic. And, you know, when she would sing Strange Fruit in these Harlem clubs, it was haunting because they hadn't seen a black woman just express themselves so just raw emotion.
Yeah.
And you could hear that raw emotion in her voice.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what you were saying earlier, it reminded me of, or made me think of why she's so powerful, is that it connects me to my students, like to our students, you know, that these kids that we get sometimes who are broken, but just like having that hope that that light in them that, you know, whether it's music or anything to like help guide them out of that.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's, I mean, I have lots of students who are just like, have so many issues because of, you know, of how they're being raised or the situations that they live in or whatever it is. But just like that hope.
Yes.
You know, that kind of what keeps us there, I believe, is like that there is something we can reach and a light inside them that can guide them out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And education is the key. Yeah. And we need to be educated in that instead of treating these drug addicts as criminals, I mean, they are humans with unique talent and a specific contribution for the world. And, you know, I wanted to give a quote from Reset Me that Billie Holiday said about being treated as a criminal. She had such a noble attitude. She didn't blame Anslinger's agents as individuals. She blamed the drug war itself because it forced the police to treat ill people like criminals. She said, imagine if the government chased sick people with diabetes and put a tax on insulin and drove it into the black market. And doctors didn't treat them and just sent them to jail. She said, if we did that, everyone we know would be crazy. Yet we practically do the same thing every day in the week to sick people hooked on drugs. She saw that in her own time.
She saw it.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happening now with the war on drugs.
Exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. It's a line by Ani DiFranco in one of her songs where she says, You criminalize the symptoms while you spread the disease.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm listening to Billie Holiday tonight, y'all. So cheers to Billie.
Cheers to Billie.
This is going to be known as the episode that Dave just got drunk.
This next segment is going to be talked about by Dave, and it's Ay, mi gente,
where we call out our own people who are not doing what they need to be doing. And this week we are calling out somebody that's been called out by many, many, many people. This week we're calling out Kanye. Everybody's talking about Kanye, ladies and gentlemen.
Which
is what he wants. But this has been a crazy week for Kanye. For those who don't know, Kanye is a Trump lover. I can't even say without laughing. It's so weird. Kanye West is a Trump lover, y'all.
Wow.
Photos of him with the Make America Great Again hat.
I don't know if I believe it.
Well, let's just take Kanye at his own words. This is from Yeezy himself. He says, quote, "You don't have to agree with Trump, but the mob can't make me not love him. We are both dragon energy. He is my brother."
Wow.
I mean, he said it. That's what he said.
I heard the same thing from a white man in McDonald's. His children go to my school. And he was saying how that the rumor is that he's an asshole in public, but one-on-one, he's a nice person.
Who is this, Kanye or Donald?
Donald Trump.
What?
I don't believe
this
it.
This is what this white man was telling me. Yeah.
Oh, don't believe the white man.
Don't believe it. If Donald just Trump kidding, was a nice person, kidding. Then his own wife would want to hold his hand.
Right. Mm.
Did you guys see the video yes. of him trying to hold his wife's hands at that state function?
It's so good.
She was like, swat. Mm. Not going to do it. Get away from me, troll. He finally had to just grab her hand. But anyway, back to Kanye. What is going on with you, man? You are the rapper who said on national television during a telethon that George Bush does not care for black people. You are the rapper who called out Republicans when we needed that voice to say these people are not upholding our needs as a community. You called them out. And now, Kanye... What is you doing, fam? Oh, my... I'm mi gente. You are a Trump supporter. I can't get over it, y'all.
I think he's literally... Think about it. He did all this shit right when he announced he has some new albums coming out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think...
He's just a controversy hog just to get attention.
But it's disgusting all the same just because it disrespects so many people that are... fucked over by the Trump's policies.
Yes.
And he does it just for publicity. It's like that's...
So we are all in agreement that we think that he's done it for publicity. I mean, I almost think
it's worse.
Some people have brought up a very interesting idea that he might be dealing with some mental illness too. Now, I don't say that to be flippant by all or libelous or anything. Don't sue us. But... it's been brought up that, you know, he recently canceled some tour dates because That's of true. Mental exhaustion. He did check into, if I was not mistaken, either a hospital for exhaustion and or rehab. So there is a history of some stressors going on with Kanye in the recent past. And some people also noticed that in these photos where he's posing with these, like, other, like, guys, one of these guys is, like, throwing a, like, white power sign. Wow. And, like, Kanye looks like he's not really there. Like, Kanye, I just can't, man. I can't with you. You have too much influence, too much history, too much importance in the black community. And like Michael said, I totally agree with you. In total agreement with you, Michael. Donald Trump's policies are dangerous, ladies and gentlemen, to the people of color. And so whether or not you're doing it for publicity or not, Kanye, we're calling you out, man. You cannot support that is so dangerous to your own community.
Even my six-year-old son said to this man, because this man, I'm sorry, I'm going back to the McDonald's guy, but he basically said that I don't like Donald Trump. And he said, okay, well, you're at a school that makes you think, why don't you like Donald Trump? And he says... because he doesn't like brown people.
Wow.
That came out of my own son's mouth.
He's going to be the next, he's going to be the new Kanye.
And he goes, and he gave the instance of them bombing Syria.
Nice.
Wow. Well, you know, there have been several clapbacks on Kanye this week. I want to share a couple of them.
Yes.
What you just said there. The drummer from The Roots recently clapped back and said... he wants to have a shirt that says Kanye, or he actually may have passed. Hey, he might have a shirt that says Kanye does not care for black people.
Oh, yes.
Woo. Clap back.
Extra clap back.
But here's my favorite clap back on Kanye this week, which was from Jordan Peele. You guys know Jordan, of course.
Yeah.
Director of Get Out. He is the originator of the sunken place concept, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, we all know what the sunken place is. Now, this is currently the place that Kanye inhabits. And Kanye, taking the heat that he did this week, he posted a photo, I guess, of his apartment saying, you know, does this look like the sunken place? Of course not, right? To which Jordan Peele replied, just got inspiration for Get Out 2.
Yes.
Starts writing script.
What if Kanye is actually like Trump's grandma or something in that head?
That's right.
Watch for those tears.
Oh my God.
That's horrible, y'all. That's horrible.
I think you're onto something, Mike. I think you're onto something.
And now the next segment is Lecciones Learned. And our awesome friend Miguel, Michael, is going to teach me a little something, something. Mm-hmm.
Spanish.
Spanish. You know,
something, something. Yes, this is Kim's favorite segment because she gets to pick up a little Spanish.
Yes.
For those who don't know, Kim has been trying to learn Spanish for years now.
Yes.
And
yes.
We actually had a thing going where you would give me vocal lessons, I would teach you a little Spanish.
I loved that.
And you learned more Spanish than I could ever sing.
Stop. That's not true at all.
See, yes, love right then. But anyway, what are we learning this week?
All right, two very important words to learn, especially as you were on the highways a lot, going from place to place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord. Here we go.
All right. The first word is cabrona.
Cabrona. Thank you for breaking it down.
Great pronunciation. Cabrona. Now, that's a word. It basically is like bitch.
My gosh.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you can also use cabron, which is the male version.
It's more like bastard, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but in sentiment and the feeling.
Yeah, so if I said, eres un cabrón to a guy,
cabrón is, yeah.
Pero como
but
like,
cabrona, that's like bitch. Yeah.
Cabrona.
And that's one, like, it feels so good to say, doesn't it?
It does feel good to say.
It's so romantic still. I mean, that's what I love about Spanish, it's like cabrona. You know, it's like, wow, I want to be called a bitch in Spanish.
There might be some girls out there who are into being called cabrona in bed, but we don't know. But you're right, there is something very satisfying about saying that word.
Right?
Eres una cabrona.
Yeah. Like, especially if you throw a pinche in front of it.
Pinche cabrona.
Pinche cabrona. Oh my gosh, couldn't put them together.
But, of course, you know, it is a derogatory term towards women, so.
Yeah.
Oh.
I prefer using it on men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know how when guys use words like that with each other, usually it's kind of almost a term of endearment. It's kind of like, mm-hmm. Eres un cabrón.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, women have taken the word bitch back. I mean, not all women believe that, but I kind of feel that way, that, you know, we took that word back. And
Well, like, I mean, even like my mom calls me cabron, like,
no, as, she does,
yeah, but just like in a loving way, like,
aww.
Like, we know when we're joking, and we call each other, we have an interesting relationship. We call each other menso and mensa, and, you know, it's like, which is like dummy kind of, you know, but yeah, so cabron,
like, mensa, isn't that the group for
That's a whole other thing.
Okay. Yeah.
But cabrón and cabrona.
Very good words to know. Mm-hmm. And what's the other one we're learning this week?
And the other one is culero.
Oh.
Culero. Now, wait, say it again.
Culero.
Culero. Do you know what culero is?
Try to figure it out. Culero. Think of a root word and see if you can figure that out.
Culero.
Culero.
Yes, this is something you can hear chanted at concerts for Spanish bands.
Football games. Football.
I have no idea.
Culero, 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 culero.
Is it like encore? Do it again?
Sometimes. No. Culero means, come on, like, asshole.
Yeah.
It's your culero.
Yes. So like, ass is culo. Culero is like a person who is an asshole.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that was ass.
Yeah.
So asshole, culero is
mm-hmm. Culero is asshole.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have any...
But how do you use it, though? Like, give us an example of how you use culero.
Well, do something to piss me off and I'll...
I thought I did that every day.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, again, it complements really well with pinche. Pinche culero.
Or eres un culero, güey, no mames.
Yeah.
Eres un pinche culero.
Wait, isn't pinche bitch culero too?
Pinche is like fucking. Fucking. Yeah.
Oh.
Eres un pinche culero.
Pinche culero, like fucking asshole.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So, pinche culera cabrón eres.
So are there like male and female? Do you say culero for.
Mm-hmm. I guess it could be a culera. Yeah.
Una culera.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that sounds right.
But it doesn't feel the same, though. But
it doesn't feel the same. But
so, how would you say you are an asshole?
Eres un culero.
Eres un culero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, normally it's usually just like pinche culero.
Oh.
All right, it's test time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kim is going to recite for us. How do you say Donald Trump is an asshole?
Donald Trump is culero.
Eso.
Es un culero.
Oh, es un culero.
Yes.
You got it. Yes.
Es un pinche culero.
Es un pinche culero. Try and it. That, yeah, go ahead.
Donald Trump es un pinche culero.
Yes!
Learn Yay! That one, kids. Learn it.
If that's all you need to learn, that's yeah. the phrase you need to know. That's yep. it.
That's oh, me. That's awesome. That's A awesome.
Plus. Let's wrap things up with our positive note, as we always do on our podcast, with eso, eso, eso. Yeah, where we just focus on something good.
Something good.
Mm-hmm. And this one isn't so much something that, I mean, it does happen, but it's not a specific instance. I just wanted to, like, focus on, you know, us being allies for other communities. I think it's very, very important. And obviously, it's like at the foundation of what this podcast is. Just being out there and being there for each other. You know, like if you are out at the mall and you see another person of color who's not from your background, smile at them. Because, I mean, think about it. How much does that little gesture help you when someone does it to you?
Yeah.
It just makes you feel so much more accepted and welcome and, you know.
Of course, people all automatically will think, what are they up to? so, because it doesn't happen.
True.
So
it
much.
Yeah. Happen. But I think coming from another person of color, it has a different connotation.
I think
like,
you're right.
I try to do that. Like, I go out of my way when I see other people. Or, you know, if I see, like, someone who's, like, obviously, like, queer or trans or something. Yes. Like, you know, to just go out of my way to make them feel comfortable. Smile or, like, you know, make a joke or whatever. Raise my eyebrows.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just to spread that humanity.
Yeah. I think that should be in general, you know, to everybody. Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, no. I do that generally, too. Yeah. But I go out of my way for people that I know are not part of
because
the quote-unquote norm.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because it's so hard for us out there. It really, really is.
This is something that I've been working on and doing a lot lately, too, especially for, you know, black men and women in Austin. Mm-hmm. As Michael mentioned earlier, Austin has very few black people living inside the city anymore. And so when you see them walking on the street, it's almost like a, whoa, there's one of us kind of a moment. Yeah. And I go out of my way every mm-hmm. time to acknowledge their existence, to smile at them, to let them know that they are loved. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what they are. They can be a businessman, businesswoman. They can be a homeless person. Lately, if they're a man or a woman, a black man or a woman, I am definitely acknowledging their existence because I know what it feels like to not be acknowledged.
Yep. Yes.
So I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cancel the invisibility, people.
That's
cancel
right. It. I'm so with you on that.
Yeah. Yes. So that, I think that's a good place to start. And of course, like allies, being allies for each other, we can do so much more.
Yes.
But, you know, that's a good place to start, I think.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. All right, people, that wraps up another episode of El Puente Podcast.
It went so fast. I wonder if it's because I drank this whole bottle of Reposado.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Which he didn't even bring. He got that here at my house. Thanks.
I'm sorry.
And didn't even share.
It was really good, though. You guys can have the drops that are left over. Anyway.
Right.
But anyways, thank you again, guys, for listening to our podcast. Just three friends trying to build some bridges, kind of share the example of our friendship and what we mean to each other and what you can mean to somebody else out there who is maybe not from your background. We all need to join together, join forces. We're not going to get anywhere if we're just working in our own little circles. So reach out and touch someone.
Yes.
All right. Thanks. See y'all next week. This is Michael.
This is Dave.
And Kim.
Bye.
No sean culeros.